You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast.
Number 181, Strut Learning, interview with Lee Johnston. That was a little teaser from a song called Pirouette, sort of a modern classical piano piece by Asher Fulero. I hope you enjoy it. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. This podcast is an interview with Lee Johnston. He's the CEO of a company called Strut Learning, the, quote, next generation LMS for innovators. Strut integrates personal learning, assessments, student success, authoring, automation, workflows, and analytics. We discuss the history of Strut, what they call Cognify, Compose, Certify, and Connect. They deliver competency-based and non-term direct assessment, in addition to more traditional online learning that you would expect from a learning management system. We talk about their market focus, their gamified personalized learning, active social learning, skills mapping that create active feedback loops. They use next-generation analytics, active workflows, and automation. Very interesting product. I hope you enjoy it. So without further ado, here's my interview with CEO Lee Johnston. Lee, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me and my audience today. I'm really excited to hear more about Strut Learning. Before we dig into the details of how Strut works, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to work for Strut?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast today. And I also want to thank you for your service to higher education, because this is a really valuable resource for those of us that are in the genre, or actually in the profession. So, you know, being able to be in higher education and coming upon this kind of resource, especially someone with your position and experience, is highly credible. And I think that's really a great resource for higher ed. A little bit about me. I'll give you the short CV. I had a career in the Air Force as a meteorologist. Did about 5 years in the classroom, full-time instructor, obviously at the college level. Moved on after that. I decided that was too hard work, so I moved over to the University of West Florida and their information systems department as the assistant director. And I spent 6 years there, learned a lot, one banner implementation. That kind of led to an offer out at Santa Monica College in California, my home state. I spent 6 years there as the information technology director, worked just a tremendous amount of learning about higher ed and the different genres. Obviously the four-year university with graduate studies, going to the community college system in California. And then I transitioned ultimately to Brandman University about 6 years after I started at Santa Monica to take on the direct assessment CBE technology stack. And those of you that aren't familiar with the direct assessment non-term rules from Title IV, I think it's considered the most exotic.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that at all. So if you want to mention that a little bit, that'd be good.
Well, non-term means that there are no terms. And then the direct assessment piece of it means within some limits, you can assess folks from a perspective of they already know that they don't have to revisit it in the curriculum. But there's a weird caveat to that, is the student can't be assessed in prior learning assessment. So you can breeze forward, but you've got to learn at least one thing. And that has to be documented. And then, it's obviously there's a million different rules, but that's the basic 10 of it.
I see. So that's a rule in California. I'm still not that familiar with how that works.
So that's a financial, that's a U.S. Department of Education rule in Title IV. So term-based programs, non-standard term programs, which take up 99.9% of all of that. And I think there's more, but at the time there were six schools that were authorized to by the DOE, to do non-term direct assessment. But the technological component of that is you know, obviously to track them, the attendance requirements, all the other requirements the DOE puts on those programs is very exotic.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess because we're all term-based, I never ran across that terminology. So tell us how Strut Learning evolved. I to be honest, up until I met you, I really hadn't heard of Strut Learning. So I know it had a former life. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Flat World, I was at Brammen working on the competency-based program there, the direct assessment piece, and we were a design partner for Flat World. We came together, really identified a gap in learning systems that would allow subscription-based or self-paced students to proceed through curriculum and still be tracked in a way. I think one of the gaps, for example, was pace and progress. If you're a self-paced student, if you're moving through curriculum as a subscription model, how do you track students that are in three or four different classes? How do you know that they're on time, on pace? Mm-hmm. So we came together with Flat World Knowledge, and Flat World and Brammen University was one of their design partners. I was with Brammen, obviously worked very collaboratively with the team at Flat World. They were a Bessemer-funded company, so they had a lot of venture capital behind them to build out their own learning systems. Worked with them through about 2017, and then the opportunity, I transitioned the company to Sagence Learning. Went from Flat World to Sagence. That lasted for about a year, and the company was eventually purchased by a private concern, and now is rebranded from Sagence Learning to Strut Learning.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's certainly easier to remember Strut Learning
than Sagence. I was at the online teaching conference recently, and one of the faculty members, we were a very popular booth because we're right next to the food, and one of the faculty members came up and we're having a conversation, and she goes, well, you should tell, and she was an English professor, obviously, and she says, you should tell everybody it's the noun, not the verb. So think of Strut as the support.
Right.
Innovative educators.
Of course.
To move that forward. So that's really where the Strut came from. So,
got it. So I take it higher ed is your main focus. Do you also have other kind of customers in K-12 or business, or is it mostly higher ed?
We do have an indirect K-12 clientele. So we have folks that are in the K-12 business that we provide services to through Strut. Most everything we have is our major institutions, the brand names that you would recommend, you know, University of Louisville, University of Maine, Presque Isle, Lipscomb, the bigger ones. We just added Calbright, the new 115th Community College out in California. We're very happy about that.
Great. Well, so let's get into, I guess, some of the philosophy behind how Strut Learning works. I know you advertise yourself as the next generation LMS for innovators. So what's your conception of I think we all know what, I guess, traditional LMS looks like, something like Blackboard or Canvas or D2L. So how would you distinguish yourself in terms of the philosophy of an LMS?
Well, I think there's a couple things. Most of the legacy learning management platforms, they're fine systems. They were developed, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. I think that was the genre. And I think they ran into very great. They're very solid systems, very expansive. They have lots of features and functions, but they're not really built on a real modular platform. So use something called application programming interface as the base case for the modular. So think in terms of a Lego block, all right? And then putting those Lego blocks together to build out other functions and features. With Strut, you can come in and essentially, and it's been, you know, it's very possible for someone to come in and build their own experience. Now, we do such a good job, I don't think people do that, but you can certainly plug into those APIs and do all kinds of fabulous things. And most of our clients leverage that to link back into a CRM or other student experience management component.
I notice you, under the different products, you talk about, that's very It's full of C's, Cognify, Compose, Certify, and Connect. So do you want to go into a little more depth on what that really means?
Well, Cognify is the learning management platform, and it's a full-featured learning management platform, as you would expect. They're really, really focused on subscription-based models. So if you're in a subscription-based, we're in a subscription-based world. So if you students now prefer Netflix over traditional TV, or I compare it Netflix versus PowerPoint, however you want to say that. So we're really built out on the Cognify for the student, and the learning experience is centered on that. It all connects to the same database on the back end. So if we say Cognify, Compose, Certify, Connect, they're all pointed at the same database, which, you know, is very important. We call that the power of one database, makes analytics very, very easy. So inside of Cognify, for example, we try to put as many as the major learning components as possible to really get away from that silo experience that you get in other platforms. I got to go off platform for my personalized learning experience. I've got to off platform for assessments. So we try to keep the faculty and the subject matter experts and instructional developers in one platform as much as possible. Now, always it's going to be the case. People are going to want to reach out, and we obviously support that. But the cost of reaching out, as you're well aware, is that fragmentation, the Humpty Dumpty effect of moving that data all over the place. So Cognify, I would just loop back and say it's the learning management platform. It's the traditional LMS experience for faculty, students, administrators, coaches, and graders. Compose is the authoring platform. So that's where you can create amazing digital content. And, you know, we're constantly making upgrades there, improvements. But it's really a very wizard-driven digital content courseware development tool. And now with the rise of OER, we're seeing lots more interest in that particular product. Certify is where we take that deep data and we provide analytics. Now, a lot of systems provide reports. You know, Strut, we felt like we needed to provide reports, obviously, but we have analytics out of the box. So you get analytics plus, you know, 30 plus reports and deep data, because all of that data stays on the Cognify platform. So you don't have to go, weave it back together. I guess picture Humpty Dumpty falling off the wall there. And that's how most platforms treat their data. You link out LTI to all these different platforms. And then finally, to kind of sum it all up, Connect is really where we differentiate ourselves in a lot of places from the other systems. We go beyond just simple integration. We're configuration over code, very, very similar to Workday. And we enable our clients. In fact, we just brought one on here a few days ago to connect an existing client, and they were really dreading it. And literally, without a single line of code, they were able to integrate with our system and automate all of their registration processes and so on. So it's a very, very valuable resource. And that one, we put a lot of effort in, because that was remember back to the Title IV non-term direct assessment piece. That's where that was born from.
I see. So I have this straight. So Connect is essentially connecting to the student information system, or is it more than that?
Yeah, it's more. It has the ability to connect to any software as a service endpoint. So as you look at the larger sphere of influence, you know, the LMS is where the learning takes place. A lot of times that's where your early alert should be. And we felt it was so important. We built it right into the system. So oftentimes the CRM is where students are notified or talked to, because they want to keep a rolling record of that. So Connect allows you to take those triggers, those event triggers, and push that information back into a CRM, or let's say you have a badging strategy. It allows you to scan that course, the courses and the maps that make out those badging. In other words, the award process for the badging could be right inside of Connect. And we have clients using Connect for that purpose.
How do students adapt to this? They're so used to, I shouldn't say that. Here, for example, most schools, they're required to read the official email. Does this isolate them from email? Is all the communication done within your system, or does it still send out to student, institutional email?
We have clients doing it both ways. We have clients that do it in platform, and that's the more traditional way of doing it. But we're seeing more and more clients move to CRMs, and they're moving to SMS, email, and other types of communication because, obviously, we don't want to create a silo. We want our customers to decide how they're going to communicate with the students. So Connect allows the educators to make the right call on, okay, I want all this to go back through the CRM. So instead of us being a silo, Connect allows us to be, instead of a walled garden, we have no walls. We'll just push the information back into your CRM.
Got it. Yeah, that's certainly of interest, I would say, to a lot of schools. I mean, we want to communicate with the students where they're actually going to pay attention, and they seem to ignore email. They, of course, they carry their phones. They seldom carry their laptops around these days, so they're very mobile. And so having a good way to connect with them would be through an app, a mobile app, or even just text messaging. What's your experience for what works best with students these days?
Well, at Santa Monica College, we had 37,000, and that was told to me that they first told me we had 27,000 students, and that was true on the iPads full time, FTES. But so communicating with students is something I learned very quickly on. It's really, to be honest with you, students have migrated to their, as you've stated, to their smart devices. They're carrying with them. It's very little emails, almost highly ineffective. CRMs that have a lot of SMS and other capabilities push that information out. Multi-channels is your best option to communicate with students.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into some of the. I'm intrigued about Compose because most at least most LMSs I'm familiar with they basically give you containers to put your content in, and you can copy and paste, you can upload documents, but they're short on tools. You would have to go outside to create engaging media. So how do you handle that? Does it give the faculty or instructional designers tools to build more engaging kinds of content?
Yeah, I think the there's a couple things about Compose. One, and this is a little bit inside baseball, but when we invented the Cognify experience, we put in something called learning nodes. One of the problems was with the legacy systems, there wasn't granular enough. So when we created Compose, one of the things we did was we built, instead of static shells, we built a shell that would allow us to instrument, so to speak. Like if you look at a major airline jet cockpit, you'll see a bunch of dials and knobs and everything. That's because there's a lot of sensors that are sitting out around the airplane that are unbeknownst to you, but that's feeding information back to the master computer. So Compose at the learning node level allows us to take down to the paragraph level and wrap a node around that and say, now I can map the student experience, those skills, knowledge, and abilities based on Bloom's or perhaps other things to that learning object so that I can have auto remediations and all these other things. We talk about engagement. So from a Strut perspective, Compose allows us to do all that, one, because the way we built the system at the node level, but on the second part of that, it allows the instructional developers to access that capability and quickly map things back. Let me give you an example of how that affects engagement. So a student works through a formative objective-based test on the platform. At the end of that, right, there's the capability for the student to click on a remediation tab, and they get taken right back to the content, and they're put in nice little tabs for them. It's like a very organized study little plan that they can work through the study plan with a single click. They click on it, and they're just taken through those learning activities that they were challenged with, and then they get another crack to see if they've improved from there. So the ability to map skills, knowledge, and abilities, to map things in a way that is really down Compose's strength. That's one of the biggest strengths of Compose, is the ability to actually lever up the way that the system was actually built to do that.
Yeah, I guess that in looking at your website, that where you say skills mapping that create active feedback loops. So this is where you get sort of into the basically like personalized instruction in a way.
We do. We do that personalized thing in both objective-based and project-based. So we're the only system that I'm aware of that can do it on both sides. So for example, if you're in a project-based and you're in a formative and you go through and you do a knowledge check and you get to the end of it, it's certainly capable of remediating. Very similar to what we do in the personalized learning lessons. Personalized learning is pretty is one of those things where it may not be the best case on pedagogically to teach someone something. So it's when you get into, I think, our BBA program, which we have white label on platform, we have about 60% of that that's project based. And we needed a way to personalize that. And that's the way the team does a brilliant job of executing on requirements of the functionals.
Also, I ran across the term active social learning. What do you mean by that?
Well, we have multiple methodologies for students to engage. And one of those is the public discussion board. But we took a little twist on that. We said, well, we want to do that at the object level also. So we tie it to not only, you know, the objective, the topic, and the activity, so the student can trace their way back there, but they can have conversations around concepts that are inside the curriculum. So that's one way of doing that. And we also have something called interactive discussion questions, which goes the opposite direction, because we wanted to mimic what happens in the classroom, or maybe even take it beyond the classroom. You're an instructor. I've been in the classroom. I ask a question of the student. The student responds. I'm not always going to ask those questions in a way that I want everybody to respond. So we have one-on-one discussion questions. They're called interactive discussion questions. So the faculty asks a question inside of the curriculum itself. So it's like someone opens a book, and inside the book itself, the question pops up for the student. And then the student has to engage that professor one-on-one. That's one way. But the social way that we do that is obviously with our public discussion forums. And those are unique because they're tied to the learning objects themselves. So you can do a lot of interesting things with those because of the way they're built out.
Interesting. It's funny how I was flashing back on somewhat analogous to something that Apple Computer tried to promulgate, oh gosh, years ago, it must be 20 years ago, you know, where they were talking about a totally different paradigm where instead of having applications that work on files, the file was sort of the center point, and then you brought in technology to modify the file. So it wasn't, I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but it sounds like it's similar to this, and where your learning objects are sort of can be repurposed and reused in many different ways. Am I far off?
No, that's exactly, it's very much the case. Once you've mapped it, then you can group it, and then from there you can track skills, you know, vis-a-vis the Bloom's taxonomy from, you know, just basically, you know, being able to repeat back facts all the way through the assessment. And it's pretty impressive technology. And I know a lot of folks are working on this, and it's been something we've been working on for a few years now. And we're very happy with where we're at with it, because I think it has a lot of benefit for the student. Because ultimately, you know, one of the reasons that folks come to Strut is because, you know, we're enabling them to give the you know, not only the faculty and the student and the administrator's feedback on the performance of the student, but the employers. So how is my student that I'm paying, you know, X number of dollars from an employer standpoint doing? Now, of course, you have to FERPA-tize that, obviously. So you have to take the student out of it, but the persona. But you can see over time, hey, you know, the 20 people I have in your program are really progressing in their communication skills.
Interesting. Yeah. And I assume that when students are engaging with your system, that you support all the different modes of text and audio and video. This is all sort of built in, of course. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it certainly seems very different. I can see how it looks like you started from scratch instead of having to, you know, a lot of the legacy companies, as you put it, were sort of trapped as being a legacy. It reminds me of Microsoft and how they're, you know, had to support sure, the old way of doing things and sort of lost some market share because they didn't sort of totally reinvent themselves. So sounds very interesting. I'm sure this will make a lot more sense when folks ask for a demo. I think it's probably a lot easier to understand how all this works. And so I'll certainly have links in my show notes to your videos and whatnot to get a really better idea how all this works. Can you point to any sort of success stories in terms of either student retention or, well, I'm sure you have some. Do you want to fill us in on any success stories?
Yeah, we have, you know, numerous success stories. I think a couple of them that stand out in my mind is, you know, what we're really specialized in is getting folks into the subscription business, whether that be on the competency-based side or just standard academic year credit hour side. Mm-hmm. So one of our clients, I think University of Maine, Presque Isle, wanted to get to market, and we got them to market in just about 100 days, which is fantastic, right? So we have a visionary leader there at Presque Isle, and, you know, we were able to come in, drop a white label BBA program. They customized it. Their faculty came in and you know, changed everything. We're obviously very flexible in that. You know, we're big on faculty ownership, faculty academic freedom. So they're able to come into the platform. It was built to do this, where they can customize everything to their liking, but they start with a very, very complete product, and they just have to put their touches on it and their student learning outcomes and institutional learning outcomes, weave those in there. So they're able to get the market in 100 days. And I think the other one is when we go out with our bigger clients and their focus is on getting B2B business. You know, if you look at Walmart, for example, they have 1.5 million employees in the United States.
Wow.
Right. And a fair amount of those in California. But if you look at Disney or Discoverer, and then our clients now have stepped out and started going direct to employer without going through OPMs. And I think that's the, you know, the power of the platform. When we go out and we partner with our customers to engage with employers, oftentimes we don't show them a legacy platform. We show them the Strut platform. So I think that's what they want. They want to know what the skills, abilities. At the end of the day, they really want to know what their students are doing in class, and we're able to show that to them. And I think that's a big deal.
Right, right. Now, you also talk about gamified learning experiences. Can you explain what that means and how do you gamify learning?
Yeah, we have the gamified piece of it. You know, we don't expect there to be, you know, a handle you can pull and four cherries to come up on the screen. That's not the way that it works. But we engage with a very serious game design educational psychologist that was trained at USC, and she came on our staff, and she was with one of our design partners. And that was where we took the game theory, but it was from an academic perspective. And what she was trying to accomplish, which I think we've done, is get some things called flow. So the game theory that we're really based off is flow. To do that, you need to know progress. So in all of our screens, the student can see, you know, the progress they're making along the way. As the faculty members can certainly see that, along with the administrators. But most importantly, a student wants to level up. So we're giving them smaller chunks, those learning nodes, right? Smaller chunks. And they're able to see their progress as they're moving through the curriculum. And I think that motivates folks. But it also gets them into the flow, because they're very small chunks. They're moving forward. They can see the needle moving. That's one very, very big part of it. And the other part of it's feedback. So when you're in our formatives or our personalized learning lesson, you get detailed feedback on your performance so that you can level up there too. So those are two good examples.
Does it give them feedback in relation to their cohort, their class?
Not yet. I think we are looking at doing that in a very nice way. But as you would imagine, you know, we're working very closely with educational psychologists and academic types, because you can also demoralize as quickly as you can motivate. So you really need to be mindful of how that's done. I think in terms of an opportunity, that's our next big opportunity.
I guess one of the last questions I have is, you know, what do you say to a institution that has a legacy LMS, and it looks like your clients are, like you say, are very innovative. So what do you say to a traditional institution that has a traditional LMS, and maybe you sold them on it, and they're planning to go the way? Could you integrate? Do you convert from their LMS, or do you basically build everything from scratch?
No, all of our institutions have one of the traditional legacy systems. And again, those are fine systems. You know, they've been around, they're tried and true. What we've been brought in to do in most cases is to offer alternatives, especially in subscription based. So where those systems don't really perform very well is in the subscription-based piece of this. And the subscription-based is kind of loaded, right? So it's not competency-based. It's credit hour. It could be either one. But the other part of the subscription is the interoperability between the student information system and the LMS. And that's why Connect is so valuable, because it's capable of speaking, you know, bidirectionally in real time to those systems. What we're generally brought in for is to add some innovation on the subscription-based side.
So I see. So it's not to replace their existing LMS necessarily.
No, you know, I don't think that we're in the business of replacing, you know, legacy system, but we're in the process of doing now is building out another option for institutions to go ahead and innovate in different directions. I was going to bring the point up on Connect. You know, we just recently completed integration with one of our existing partners. And I think there was a large degree of disbelief after it was over with. There was not a single line of code written by them. They just basically plugged in and it worked. And I think at the end of the day, everyone is kind of breathing a sigh of relief, like, okay, that's a pretty impressive accomplishment. I wonder how they did that. And of course, we're not going to tell you how we do that. But no, you know, configuration over code, and then a single line of code. So all of our clients run the same code base. And we all operate off of a single database. Obviously, we have tenants inside of there. But that's the wave of the future. And I think, you know, we're confident enough in the system we built out that over time, we're going to see more and more. And that's happening every day at a client. We'll oftentimes get a call. There's more of our programs coming onto your platform.
Got it. Well, listen, this has been very interesting. I always like to identify, you know, interesting and new technologies for teaching, and it sounds like it's very unique. And having come from a long line of use of traditional LMSs, this is really refreshing. I think it's certainly worth folks taking a look at, especially if they, you know, it's a hard road to hoe to replace an LMS, but if you're supplementing it, maybe showing it to some more of the innovative faculty you have that really want to take it and run with it, I think this would be very interesting to them. I really appreciate your time. It's an interesting product, and I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you for having me today, Rod, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed my interview about Strut Learning. Make sure you check out the show notes for links to their website, and stay tuned for the full song Pirouette by Asher Fulero. Until next time, have a great week. Thank you.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company. Podcast.